Hey there. Ready to like dive into some seriously like thought-provoking stuff today.
Oh, yeah.
We're tackling a topic that's, sparked a lot of debate. How effective are liberal policies, really, when it comes to closing those like persistent racial gaps, especially in wealth and education? It's a big question, and to get a handle on it, we're going to be looking at a blog post that really doesn't pull any punches.
I think provocative might be an understatement.
You're not kidding. The title alone had me doing a double take. The failure of the liberals' approach to closing the racial gaps is measured in dead bodies and incarcerations. It's from a blog called Wealth Building Powers, run by an experienced investor who's all about promoting financial literacy. So, right off the bat, we're dealing with someone who's looking at this through a particular lens.
Definitely. And that's what makes these deep dives so fascinating, right? We're not just getting information, we're getting a perspective. And it's up to us to think critically about it.
So let's unpack what this author is saying. He comes out swinging, basically arguing that those classic liberal policies, welfare, affirmative action, and more lenient criminal justice reform haven't actually moved the needle like they were supposed to. And he's got numbers to back it up.
He does. And one of the most striking stats he highlights is that before 1965, the black poverty rate was declining by an average of 2.2% per year. But after the major expansion of welfare programs, that rate slowed to about 0.7% per year. Now, correlation doesn't equal causation, of course, but it's a point that makes you stop and think.
It really does. And then there's this other bombshell he drops. Between 1960 and 2010, the percentage of black children born to unwed mothers rose from 23% to over 70%. He links that to welfare incentives, suggesting that maybe the structure of these programs unintentionally disincentivizes traditional family structures. I mean, wow, that's heavy stuff.
It is. And to be fair, attributing such a massive societal shift to one single factor is an oversimplification. There's a whole web of cultural, economic, and historical forces at play here. But, and this is where I think the author raises a valid point, it's worth examining if certain policies, even with the best intentions, might have unintended consequences we haven't fully grappled with.
Right, because nobody's arguing that these programs were set up to cause harm. But maybe the way they're designed needs a second look.
Exactly. It's about having those uncomfortable conversations and being open to the possibility that even well-intentioned approaches might need tweaking.
Okay, so we've got welfare. Now let's move on to another hot-button issue: affirmative action, especially in higher education. This author uses a term, and you'll have to help me out here. This is one I've heard but never fully understood: academic mismatch.
And it's a controversial idea, to say the least. Basically, the argument is that placing students in academic environments where they might be significantly less prepared than their peers can actually backfire. It's not about intelligence or potential, but more about the pacing and level of instruction.
So, like, imagine a student who aced math in their high school, but then gets thrown into this super competitive university math program where everyone's already at a much more advanced level. They might feel lost, get discouraged, and maybe even drop out, even though they could have totally thrived in a different setting.
And the author uses an example from Duke University. He claims that while Black students initially choose science majors at higher rates than white students, they actually graduate with science degrees at much lower rates. He uses this to illustrate the potential downside of affirmative action, even while acknowledging the historical context and goals behind it.
So it's not about saying affirmative action is bad, but maybe the way it's implemented sometimes needs to be revisited.
It's all about nuance. How do we ensure equity while also setting students up for success? It's a tough question, no doubt.
No easy answers here.
Nope.
So if this author is saying these traditional approaches aren't working,
Right.
where does he go next? What's his big solution?
This is where things take an interesting turn. He's a huge advocate for charter schools.
So that's where he lands. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Charter schools are often seen as a kind of alternative
Right.
to the traditional public school system.
Yep.
And his argument is
that charter schools, especially those serving low-income and minority students, outperform traditional public schools on several key metrics. He cites data on standardized test scores, graduation rates, even college attendance.
So he's making the case that charter schools level the playing field, essentially.
That's his contention. And he ties this into a larger point about school choice and competition. He believes that giving parents more options puts pressure on traditional public schools to step up their game.
And, of course, you can't talk about charter schools without talking about teachers' unions.
Right.
Which this author does not shy away from.
No, he doesn't.
He pretty much accuses them of putting job security ahead of student outcomes.
He does. He sees unions as a major roadblock to expanding charter schools, arguing that they resist any changes that might threaten the status quo, even if those changes could benefit students.
This is where I'm curious to get your take.
Sure.
You've looked at this from a research perspective.
Mm-hmm.
What's the reality check on this whole charter school debate?
Okay.
Are they really the silver bullet solution to closing the achievement gap?
It's definitely more complicated than that.
Yeah.
While there's no denying that some charter schools have achieved incredible results, especially in communities that have been historically underserved, it's not a universally applicable success story. Some research actually suggests that charter schools, on average, perform no better than traditional public schools.
Interesting.
And there are also concerns about accountability and the potential for discrimination in admissions practices.
So it's not as simple as saying all charter schools good, all public schools bad.
Right.
It's a much more nuanced picture.
Absolutely. And that's what makes these conversations so important, right?
Yeah.
We need to look at the data, consider different perspectives, and avoid oversimplifying complex issues.
Couldn't agree more. Okay, so we've covered welfare, affirmative action, charter schools. What else is on this author's agenda? What's the next big idea he tackles?
Well, he shifts gears a bit and really emphasizes the importance of personal responsibility.
Okay, yes. It's like he's saying, look, we can talk about policies all day long, but ultimately individuals have a role to play too.
Exactly. He talks about the need for a strong work ethic, the value of stable families, and how these factors are essential for long-term success.
Regardless of background.
It's interesting because this is where the tone of the blog post changes a bit. It goes from like critiquing existing policies to offering up alternative solutions.
Right.
Almost like a roadmap for what he thinks needs to happen.
Right. And it gets pretty specific.
Okay.
He lays out a whole list of recommendations, including things like welfare reform to reduce dependency.
Okay.
Rethinking affirmative action. Supporting proactive policing and encouraging entrepreneurship, especially within minority communities.
Okay, let's break some of those down. Welfare reform, what does he have in mind specifically?
He doesn't go into a ton of detail, but the gist is that he wants to restructure welfare programs in a way that incentivizes work and self-sufficiency.
Okay.
The idea being that it's better to equip people with the skills and opportunities to earn a living than to simply provide a safety net indefinitely.
I can see how that's a controversial idea.
Yeah.
On the one hand, you want to help people who are struggling.
But on the other hand, you don't want to create a system that discourages people from becoming self-sufficient.
Exactly.
It's a tough balance.
It is. And then there's the whole rethinking affirmative action piece.
Yeah.
It's a minefield, to say the least.
Yeah. Where do you even begin with that?
Well, the author's point seems to be that while affirmative action had good intentions, leveling the playing field for historically disadvantaged groups, it may not be the most effective tool anymore.
Okay.
Or it may need significant adjustments.
Right.
He doesn't explicitly call for ending it entirely.
Okay.
But he definitely suggests that it's time for a serious reevaluation.
You know, it makes me think about that academic mismatch concept we were talking about earlier.
Yep. Right.
Maybe part of rethinking affirmative action means finding ways to ensure that when students are given opportunities, they're also given the support they need to truly thrive in those environments.
Absolutely. It's not enough to just open the door. You have to make sure people have the tools and resources to walk through it and succeed on the other side.
Okay, so we've talked about welfare reform, affirmative action. What about this idea of proactive policing? This one always sparks debate.
Yeah, and the author's coming at this from a perspective that's likely to ruffle some feathers.
Okay.
He argues that a more proactive approach to law enforcement, and he's careful to distinguish this from racial profiling, can actually help to reduce crime and improve safety in high-crime neighborhoods.
Okay.
His point is that when communities feel like law enforcement is absent or ineffective,
right,
it creates a vacuum where criminal activity can flourish.
I can see how that argument would be appealing to some,
right,
especially those who live in communities that have been disproportionately affected by crime.
Mm-hmm.
But it also raises concerns about potential over-policing.
Right.
And the potential for bias to creep into law enforcement practices.
Right. It's incredibly delicate. How do you strike that balance between keeping communities safe while also protecting individual rights?
Yeah.
And ensuring that law enforcement is applied fairly and equitably across the board?
Mm-hmm.
There's no easy answer there.
Definitely not. And then there's this last piece, encouraging entrepreneurship.
Right.
Particularly within minority communities.
Yep.
I mean, it sounds great in theory,
yeah,
but how do you actually make it happen?
Well, the author talks about the need for things like access to capital, mentorship programs,
yeah,
and educational resources specifically tailored to aspiring entrepreneurs from underrepresented backgrounds.
Okay.
He sees this as a key way to create wealth and opportunity from within these communities,
right,
rather than relying solely on external solutions.
That's like that old saying, give a man a fish and you feed him for a day.
Right.
Teach a man to fish and you weed him for a lifetime. But in this case, it's more like,
exactly,
could teach a man to start a business.
Yeah.
And you empower him to create opportunities for himself and others.
Exactly. It's about fostering a sense of agency and self-reliance.
Okay, so we've got this whole laundry list of recommendations. Welfare reform, rethinking affirmative action, proactive policing, promoting entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot to digest.
It is.
What's your take on the feasibility of all this?
Well, I think it's important to remember that these are just one person's opinions.
Right.
And implementing any of these changes would be incredibly complex.
Yeah.
And would likely face pushback from various groups.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think the author raises some valid points about the need to critically examine existing policies.
Right.
And to be open to new approaches,
yeah,
even if they challenge conventional wisdom.
Right. Because at the end of the day, it's not about being right or wrong,
uh-huh,
or even about liberal versus conservative.
Exactly.
It's about finding solutions that actually work.
Precisely. And that requires honest dialogue.
Yeah.
A willingness to consider different viewpoints.
Right.
And a focus on the desired outcomes.
Mm.
Rather than just ideology.
You know, speaking of outcomes,
yeah,
there's this one statistic in the blog post that really hit me hard.
Okay.
The author claims that in certain U.S. cities, a young person might be statistically more likely to end up incarcerated,
ooh,
or dead,
yeah,
than to achieve middle class status.
It's a stark reality.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly disheartening to think about the systemic barriers,
yeah,
and lack of opportunities that contribute to this kind of statistic.
So like you read something like that,
yeah,
and it,
yeah,
just punches you in the gut. You,
yeah,
know? You have to ask yourself, are we really doing enough to break these cycles?
Right.
Are the solutions we're talking about actually addressing the root causes?
Those are the questions that keep me up at night, honestly.
Yeah.
And I think it's a reminder that there's no one-size-fits-all solution.
Yeah. Right.
No magic bullet.
Right.
It's going to require a multifaceted approach, mm-hmm, involving not just government policies,
yeah,
but also community involvement. Mentorship programs, huh, access to quality education,
yeah,
job training,
mm-hmm,
and creating pathways to economic empowerment.
It's about investing in these communities.
Yeah.
Not just with money, but with time, resources,
oh, right,
and genuine support.
Exactly. It's, yeah, about fostering hope and opportunity,
right,
where there's currently despair and limitation.
You know, this whole conversation brings us back to that idea of personal responsibility.
Yeah.
It's not about blaming individuals for systemic problems.
Right.
But it is about recognizing that even within challenging circumstances,
mm-hmm,
individuals still have the power to make choices that shape their own lives.
It's about agency. It's about believing in your own ability,
right,
to create a better future for yourself and for your community,
mm,
even when the odds seem stacked against you.
And that's a powerful message.
It is.
So as we wrap up this deep dive,
yeah,
I want to leave our listeners with a challenge.
Right.
Don't just passively absorb this information.
Right.
Let it spark something in you.
Think critically about what you've heard.
Yes.
Talk about it with your friends, family, colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
And most importantly, ask yourself,
yeah,
what can I do, even in a small way,
right,
to be a part of the solution?
Because even small actions when multiplied across a community, can create a ripple effect that leads to real change.
Yeah.
So go out there, deep divers, and be the change you want to see.
That's right.
Thanks for joining us on this journey.